ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Now, of course, like many people this time of year, Warwick Hadfield having a break over Christmas and New Year, but I've got another great Aussie sports storyteller to fill in some of those shoes as well. In fact, he can lay claim to being Australia's sports master storyteller. Ken Pace, sports journo, commentator, after-dinner speaker, very sought-after one. He's published more books on sport than any other Australian. I believe 91 to date. Ken, have I missed a couple there? Are we still at 91?
Working on number 92. Thanks so much for the big introduction. A friend of mine from Sydney, Nick, called Jack Pollard. Bless you, Jack. He did 97. But he's left us. He's living up in the sky somewhere. So I'm coming at you, Jack. So I only got five or six to go, Nick, but lovely to be joining your program.
I am so excited to be talking about this. I know your nickname is Masterpiece, or occasionally get Tolstoy, I imagine, War and Peace.
Yeah, well, I used to work for The Age. I joined The Age as a 17-year-old, and I did the Melbourne Club Cricket Averages. Took me about 3 days to do it these days. Of course, no internet or anything like that.
Yeah.
And the sports editor's come back from work and he said, "What's this rubbish, Tolstoy?" And he threw it straight in the bin. Actually, his language, Nick, might have been a bit stronger than that.
Yes, back in those days, for those papers, it would have been very strong language indeed.
Hey, I was just 18. It was a Thursday night. The sports editor had probably a third red wine that he didn't need to have. And I was the brunt at the other end. So I quickly learned after that, don't approach the sports editor any time on a Thursday night after going out for drinkies.
Well, I don't want to delay us a bit, but how were you compiling those numbers? Were you calling the clubs?
No. You'd have all the averages in those days were printed in the papers. So there were 16 clubs back then.
Oh.
And so I was writing down all the players' names, all their leading statistics. Batting and bowling, as I said, it took me 3 days, but it's something that I'm crazy about cricket, obsessed by cricket. Nick, my latest book with Greg Chappell's called The Chappell Chronicles, and we've been launching it in Adelaide and in Melbourne. I did my own autobiography called Living the Dream, 60 years in football, AFL footy, and cricket. So I'm really living the dream from the point of view of working in, especially cricket, every day. So I'm having a ball.
Well, living the dream, having a chat to you about this. And let's talk cricket because, of course, Aussies retaining the Ashes, three straight wins out of those five scheduled tests. Where does this leave British cricket?
Well, the Ashes have been forfeited yet again in an embarrassing way. Just 11 days it took the Australians. Two in Perth, four in the second test match, and then five in this recent Adelaide test match. So they've been Scheisenhausen, as the Rex Hunt used to say down here on one of the commercial stations. And even with a shell of a team, like Steve Smith didn't play last test, Cummins, the captain, didn't play in the first two, and just news for this week coming into the Boxing Day test match, of course, starting Friday, Cummins won't play in Melbourne or Sydney. So Steve Smith's going to have a couple of more captaincy reigns, but the Australians are so strong they can just about field any 11, and they've brought in Jai Richardson, who's a fast bowler from Perth who hasn't played for 4 years. He's half a chance to play, but I'd probably go with Michael Nisa, who took five wickets in the second test, yet got dropped. It's like making 100 runs in a backyard at Mum's on Christmas Day and then saying, "Well, you didn't bat that well, kid. Go inside." So the Australians, they're red hot. The so-called Baz ball phenomenon of the English, whatever they're doing, it's just not working. They all had a week off in between test matches, Nick, as you know, in Noosa, and now the managing director of cricket is mounting an inquiry because apparently, surprise, surprise, they were drinking too much. So what else would you do in Noosa?
Well, hang on, I want to be really clear here because the Aussies have been hot, but has England been bad as well? Is it a combo of both or have we just been dominating?
Yeah, until the last day, England actually showed just earlier in the week a lot of fight. A boy called Jamie Smith, his first time to Australia, he hit Stark for four, and Mitchell Stark is the player right now in the world, the biggest, best-performed fast bowler clearly in the world, maybe one of the best of all time, and people are now saying to say that of him. But Smith hitting for four fours in a row, Stark got him out, next ball, and you could tell, yeah, it was so wrapped, you know, to be able to get the wicket. Lots of emotion, but England actually on the last day, they needed more than 200, and they brought the target down to 80-something. So their tail really wagged. So that'll give them a little bit of confidence coming into Melbourne. But right now, Nick, if I was a betting man, I'd be going for 5-0 Australia. And one of the commentators out here is a terrific bloke, Stuart Broad. He was saying 5-0 England right at the start. So he's got a fair amount of egg on his face right now.
That's breakfast for three right on that face right now. When was the last time we saw a 5-0?
Oh, only a couple of series ago.
Was it?
England have been here four times. They have not won a test match in the last four tours. Okay, they won in 2010-11, but that's 15 years. But they speak a big game. They talk themselves up. They've got some big-name stars, but boys like Duckett, who's been a brilliant player in England, Harry Brook, who's their vice captain, again, he's averaging 60, but this summer he's averaging something like 25 against the Australians. So they just haven't been good enough in the clinch moments. Their fast bowlers have been okay. Archer's good when he wants to be good, when he tries hard. That's only one in three, you know. And Steve Smith had a crack at him at the conclusion of the second test match. It's all right, champ, and nothing's on the game and you bowl fast. And that was really nice rhetoric from Steve Smith, just to let them know that the Australians, they're right on top, not only physically, but psychologically as well.
Psychologically, indeed. Ken Peace is who we're chatting to, stepping in, talking all things sport with us. A lot of eyes on Mitchell Stark. Thoughts?
He's got 22 wickets in three matches now. Mm. Warn the Wrecker, my mate Shane Warn. We used to live in neighbouring suburbs, Beaumaris, me, and Black Rock Shane, and he took 20 wickets in two test matches, including a hat-trick in Melbourne. He'd never before taken a hat-trick, and he does it in a test match. So he was phenomenal. But Stark has been just as good in this series, and he's 35 or 36, Nick, yet he's running in like a young man, 10 years younger, and he's bowling serious pace, 145, 146 clicks, which is serious pace, and it's every ball, every spell. So he's been magnificent, but also fielding and also with the bat. He got top score for the Australians. He was man of the match for the Australians in the first two test matches. So he really has been, if there's one difference between the two teams, it's that boy Mitchell Stark from Sydney.
That age is remarkable too, as you said. I mean, it's not old by any sense, but when you're a professional sportsman, it takes a toll. So to be in your 30s, the second half of your 30s, and still pushing it that way, remarkable.
Oh, yeah, no, he's been very good. But, you know, the world is just closing in on England and their coach, Brendan McCullum, New Zealand coach. They play this baseball style where they just go out and just go for it right from the start. Well, tell you what, it hasn't been working. And they had their lead-up has been all over the shop, Nick, and they had, you know, this Noosa controversy, which is raging right now. Somebody said it was like a stag do with so many drinks being had on the local beaches there. But when they came to Australia, there's a little idyllic place called Lilac Hill in Perth, going up north. And they had one two-day friendly game amongst themselves, the Englishmen, and they went straight into a test match. And surprise, surprise, they lost it on the bounciest wicket in the country in Perth, at Perth Stadium, in 2 days. So they've really been disappointing. And the people I feel sorry for, they've got 20,000 fans coming to every day's play, the Barmy Army. And more are going to be arriving in the next 48 hours to be able to go and say, we've been to Melbourne and to Sydney for the New Year test match as well. But they're the people that are being let down. So no wonder after the last test match, and I know you caught just the highlights at the end, Stokes, after shaking the hands of everybody, he took his whole team over to the outer where the Barmy Armies was, and he shook hands and they waved to them and thanked them and clapped them because they've been really stoic in their support. But I'll tell you what, they're not getting value for money in their airfares right now.
No, they are not, but a very class act to do it that way. Staying on Boxing Day, Sydney to Hobart getting ready?
Oh, isn't that exciting? Now, this race has been going, okay, it's a rich man's race, let's face it, but it's good fun. And this is the 80th running Sydney to Hobart, first time held in 1945. But what's really interesting me with this, Nick, is they've got the classic yachts of yesteryear. Okay, there mightn't be any from 1945, but the Young Endeavour is one of them. And it's a beautiful clipper, you know, old-time clipper. And so it's going to lead all these other fellow classic old wooden tubs out into Sydney Harbour and beyond for the absolute ripping first hour of that particular race. You do hope that going down the East Coast that the conditions are going to be nice. I still remember the horrendous running. Gee, it must be 10, 15 years ago. You know, people lost their lives. Gee, some of those sailors, they really have so much courage. And one of my mates, Nick, he won a Brownlow medal, Jared Healy, and he's been on probably about seven or eight Sydney to Hobarts, but he'd make sure that he'd go on the best possible, biggest boat that he possibly could. But when they sail into the Derwent, and another of my old football mates called Royce Hart has had a place there at South Arm, and the Derwent opens up, and it's such a deep river. And he and Royce just sits out on his front balcony and watches the world go by with these beautiful yachts. He says it's just the highlight of his year every year. So that's happening, of course, on Boxing Day. But then on the Saturday here, Melbourne to Hobart as well. Not quite as groovy, not quite as sexy, but so many happy sailors are going to be involved in those two races.
It'll be a huge amount of fun. The 80-year celebration, bringing out the old ships, is going to look stunning. But it also hammers home how high-tech the modern sailing ship is these days.
Oh, yeah. Well, I probably disagree a little bit with these super maxis, but they're all within the rules. And see, I'm a little bit older than you, Nick. I go back to 83 in the America's Cup. And when the red boat, Dennis Connor, the American's red boat, got beaten by John Bertrand and the Australians, Ben Lexon, with that brilliant design.
The winged keel, baby. Put it on everything for a while.
Absolutely. It was just riveting TV. Yeah. And Bob Hawke, the then Prime Minister, said to every boss out there, give them a holiday, and if you sack them, you're a bum, he said. It was a lovely quote from RJ Bob Hawke, the Prime Minister of the time. So, yeah, I'm not a boatie. My son-in-law is. He builds Cuda boats, which are wooden boats. And our little grandson, Orion, he sent me some film of him in one of these little tiny ones the other day. So it's a fantastic sport for young kids. And obviously a Melbourne sport, you know, like cricket and tennis, is just synonymous with high summer, isn't it, down under on the East Coast?
Oh, absolutely on that one. And look, tennis, we're a little way away, but it's starting to hot up.
Oh, yeah, it's like, my daughter, Jessie, she goes to every day of just about every game, and it's always a red letter day if I give her some tickets to go to Melbourne Park. It is only a few weeks ago, and there's still talk of Nick Kyrgios being a wild card. They let in four Aussie wild cards in the last 48 hours, including a couple of unpronounceables. There's a boy called Ricky Haiji Carter. He's only won one singles match in Melbourne. This is his fourth Australian Open in a row. So he's got a fourth wild card, but he did win the men's doubles title in 2023 at Melbourne Park. So he's got some good form. He's made of the fourth round of the US Open. So he, Priscilla Hahn, Talia Gibson and Taylor Preston, they're the four Aussies. So in the singles main draw, there's eight men and eight women, so 16 in all. So it's not quite the halcyon days of the 50s and 60s with Rod Laver and Beauty Nuke, John Newcomb, Fred Stolle, Tony Roach, all these superstar players as they were, you know, especially Laver, the Rockhampton Rocket. And he still fronts up at some of the Australian Open, you know, the pre-match and at the end of ceremony stuff. He is remarkable. So, yeah, the tennis is going to be big in January, but right now, as you and I are saying, it's going to be cricket and more cricket in the next few days.
Ken, I can see why they call you the masterpiece. You've been fantastic on Nightlife, mate. Thank you so much.
Did I pass the audition?
You passed the audition. We'll have you back anytime you've got time. Thanks, mate.
Good on you, Nick. Cheers.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.